Grace and peace be with us, with the one, and from the one who promised to be the light of life for all. Amen. The book of Isaiah is a grand narrative. Grand narratives, they aim at explaining the world, its origins, its rationales, and its destination. Grand narratives offer an interpretation of life worlds, and they invite the audience to identify with what has been narrated. Grand narratives invite the audience to become part of a hermeneutical community. They offer the opportunity to adopt that very narrative as part of one's own identity, as part of one's own history. There is actually quite a lot to interpret for the Isaiahs of the grand narrative. There is victories and defeats, home and exile, judgment and promise, and there is over and over Jerusalem, a place of longing and belonging, a place of socio-political religious challenges, a city that, according to Isaiah, can only be saved once the poor form part of the table, a place of universal celebration, reunification, and reconciliation between the peoples of the world, and a city torn between utopia and dystopia, a city tasked by Isaiah to search for justice. The search and the longing for what is yet to come and become, I think this is something that unites all who contributed to the book of Isaiah. Maybe this is the kind of smallest common denominator between Proto, Deutero, and Trito Isaiah, and whoever else might have been involved in the formation and the redaction of this great book. The sermon text was just read to us. It's found in the final chapters of the book of Isaiah. It's especially here that questions of justice and salvation emerge quite strongly. Let me just read it once again. The year of the Lord's favor. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of the oil of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of hopelessness and despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in my God. For he has clothed me with garments of salvation and arrayed me in a robe of his. I delight greatly in the Lord. My soul rejoices in him. Those are rather potent images and potent words. Actually, partly words, as we also have listened to, reoccur in the Gospel according to Luke. And there they would be describing the mission and the mandate of Jesus. Grand narratives also offer an account of its respective Sitz im Leben, the context from which they emerge. And the same applies to the audience. Our respective Sitz im Leben, our life worlds, our contexts, they also co-determine the lenses through which we read, understand, and also apply the text. Isaiah 61 on my side is and will always remain embedded in a very special Sitz im Leben, a location that for many thousands of people a day is actually much more of a transit area than an actual place of its own. A couple of years ago, I had a chance to visit Agadez in Niger. The old city is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. But much more than that, the city is a transfer site for human hopes, dreams, and aspirations. A transfer site for people. Its central bus station is the starting point of the Trans-Sahara route. Dozens of buses and trucks are parked higgledy-piggledy across, and yet all of them with a joint destination, the northern coastline. The hardship and often long duration of their journeys shows in people's faces. People climb onto the open loading areas of trucks. Water cans in different sizes are pushed up by bystanders. Children sell pita bread and fresh fruits. There is heat haze all over at temperatures of 45 degrees Celsius. Voices of thousands of people fuse into one buzzing sound that gets partly predominated by a huge speaker of a neighboring mosque. Faith and religion are often part of the meager luggage that people take onto the trucks. Special editions of the Bible and the Quran get lovingly wrapped into carefully embroidered covers. Allah's eye in form of a glass bead and small statues of Maria are kissed before they get stuffed into plastic bags and backpacks. For many, their respective faith is what actually drives and energizes them on their long journey, a motto providing energy and hope for each new day. Evening has come. John, a pastor who carries his church along wherever he goes, has set up his church for the night, right at the margins of the busy bus station. His church is actually quite easily assembled. A couple of aluminium bars and a huge canvas cover made out of maize meal bags that he has sewn together. In the middle, a paraffin lamp and a plain wooden cross. Laid out around the cross, there are a couple of tattered plastic bags that were serving as cushions. A small sign at the entrance announces Karibu, welcome in Swahili. When I enter, the church is nearly filled to capacity. There are John, two younger women, and an elderly man. Agnes, originating from South Sudan, reads from Isaiah chapter 61. She beckons me over. A dialogue emerges. Joseph, the elderly man originating from Mali, starts the conversation on the text. Justice, he said. This text is all about justice. At the end of that night, I've learned a lot about Isaiah. And at the end of the night, I've learned a lot about justice and the violation thereof. Agnes flees from rebel groups, from imprisonment and torture. She seeks to escape gender-based violence and absolute poverty and the sense of hopelessness and despair that comes with it. Ifoma flees from Boko Haram-initiated terror in northern Nigeria. She's also managed to escape from traffickers. And Joseph flees from a region that's been erupted and torn apart by violence between different religious groups, violence that resulted in the killing of his wife and their four children. They are looking for safeguarding of their rights, for justice, and for hope. They are seeking a different, a peaceful, a more just, and a more participatory world. They are addressing essential questions of humankind. What is the human being? How am I supposed to act? And what actually can I hope for? The book of Isaiah is a grand narrative, offers answers to these questions. Answers that actually seem very much up to date. The book recalls the dignity of the human being because there is a creator God. It talks of justice because there is a God who puts the marginalized at center stage. It narrates of hope and thus invites to become part of a pilgrimage of justice and peace. Isaiah uses the imagery of trees or of plantations. People, thus Isaiah, can turn into trees and plantations of justice. Trees can be fruit bearers. They offer protection, and quite often they surround a central space in a village, in a community. In a way, they can keep us grounded. In John's village, there was a huge tree right in the middle. Villagers used to sit under the tree as long as it took to settle a dispute that had emerged. Ifoma recalls the tree at the margins of her village. Here she found rescue in the treetops covered by leaves. It was here that she survived the Boko Haram attack on the village. Agnes has a small orchard next to her village in her mind's eye. The orchard was meant for the sole use by passing migrants before it was destroyed. And I'm thinking of a chestnut tree right in the vicinity of Theresienstadt concentration camp, where people from the villages nearby deposited food and clothing to support those who managed to escape the camp. Reminiscing about trees brought us back to the book of Isaiah and to the human trees mentioned by the author, the trees and the plantations of justice. All of us agreed that justice needs a solid foundation, a kind of substantial rooting. What is it that turns a person into a person who's just and acts in a just manner? Is it believing in and following a God who again and again proclaimed justice for those who get marginalized? Is it a sense of justice based on the assumption that we are all equal? Is it treating everybody in a way one would like to be treated? Or is it not treating everybody alike, but differentiating according to the need to accord the same chances in life to everybody? Is it ... Justice is rather a complex state of being in theory and in praxis. It was John who at the break of dawn suggested seeing with the heart's eye as the very core of justice. Let me tell you a story that relates to this, he said. I was once told this story by a Jewish rabbi in Kenya. It is a story that comes from Eastern Europe. And this story tells us something about seeing with our heart's eye. It goes like this. A rabbi asks his students, how is it that you can determine the exact point of dawn, the hour when the night is over and the day is starting? Is it maybe when you can distinguish between a sheep and a dog from the distance, one student suggested? No, said the rabbi. Is it then when you can tell apart a fig tree and a grapevine, offered another student? No, said the rabbi. But what is it then? Tell us the answer, the students requested. The rabbi said, it is when you look into the face of a human being, any human being, and there is enough light in you so that you can see in that very face the face of your brother or sister. And to that point, it is still deepest night, and the darkness is still in us. Recognizing people as fellow human beings, even more as brothers and sisters, this, I guess, really describes the perfect vision of the heart, a kind of long-sightedness that calls people into solidarity and into mutual responsibility for and before one another, as well as before God. The vision of the heart forms the basis of acting justly. Narratives continue to live once they are re-narrated and shared, and they continue to live once they are put into action. Then they offer a stable rooting and tree-like growth. Maybe seeing with our heart's eyes is a good starting point towards becoming the specific trees Isaiah talks about, trees and plantations of justice. May God, our creative gardener, grant us whatever it is that we need to grow in that direction. Amen. I brought along a little something for you. Actually, it's something that the pastor in that collapsible church, John, was also sharing with us. Once we were about to leave his church, it was pretty clear that he wanted to give us something to hold onto. And he was digging underneath the canvas and the tarpaulin and found a couple of nearly burnt out candles, all wrapped in aluminium foil. And then he started digging in his small backpack and he brought out a couple of clothes packs. And he handed a candle and a clothes pack to all of us, basically with the words saying, if you look at these candles, there's actually not that much light left in them, but we always have the hope that we can cling on to that another world, a world with more light, with more justice, with more peace, is possible to those who trust in it and to those who work for it. And I would like to leave a candle with still a bit more light in it and a clothes pack with all of you. Amen.